Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, October 31st, 2022. Coming up this hour,
the S&P 500 enters the last trading day of October, up almost 9% for the month.
Investors await this week's Fed decision and jobs report.
Barclays trading revenue tops estimates. We'll speak with the bank's CEO.
And in Brazil, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva wins the presidential election.
The man accused of attacking the husband of House Speaker Pelosi will be charged today. Plus, South Korea mourns after a crowd crush kills more than 150 people. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stanshower in sports. The Jets and Giants' four-game win streaks both came to an end. The Knicks lost. The Rangers and Devils both won.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good Monday morning. I'm Amy Morris.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Futures are moving lower as we start a busy week for markets. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street. We check the markets for you every 15 minutes during the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures right now down 22 points. Dow futures down 161. NASDAQ futures are lower by 89 points. 10-year Treasury is down 10/32. The yield 4.05%. Yield on the 2-year 4.48%. NYMEX crude is down 0.7% or 63 cents at $87.29 a barrel. And COMEX gold right now is down 0.3% at $1,639.70 an ounce. Amy.
Nathan, stocks enter the last day of the trading month in rally mode. The S&P 500 has gained almost 9% in October. The Dow Jones Industrial Average has surged more than 14%. Michael Sheldon is Chief Investment Officer at Hightower RDM Financial Group.
The Dow is the first of the major indices to move back above their key 200-day moving averages. So that's something a lot of investors watch, separating a longer-term rally versus a short-term rally. None of the other major markets have done that, but that's certainly something to monitor going forward.
Hightower RDM Financial Group Michael Sheldon notes the S&P 500 is on its longest weekly rising streak since August.
Well, Amy, investors have two potential market-moving events this week. The Fed makes an interest rate decision on Wednesday, and the government issues its monthly employment report on Friday. Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice reports.
Economists see another jumbo U.S. rate hike, 75 basis points, to stop red-hot inflation. Consumer psychology, a key to snapping a price breakout, suggests the Fed has its work cut out. Americans see the cost of living rising 5% over the next year based on University of Michigan data. Turning to America's labor market, economists anticipate an October payroll gain, but not as robust as September. The unemployment rate will probably remain low amid historic labor shortages in many industries. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Vinny. The latest Bloomberg MLive Pulse survey suggests if the Fed Chair Jerome Powell gives any dovish signals during this week's press conference, he might send investors scrambling. Almost half of 250 respondents polled last week said they were buying the dollar ahead of the decision, and about 78% expected 2-year Treasury yields to go up.
Well, it's going to be another busy week for earnings, Amy. More than a third of the companies in the S&P 500 report this week. We get the story from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
With more than 260 S&P companies reporting so far, about 71% have delivered positive earnings surprises, despite some notable technology misses. Emily Hill is founding partner at Bowersock Capital Partners.
You know, yes, some earnings are exceeding this reasonably low bar, but overall, we have slowing growth. And I think what we're going to see is more of what we just saw from big tech. And in the first quarter of next year, we're going to see the impact of the strong dollar, rising interest rates, even more than we have now.
In addition to the healthcare giants, this week we will hear from AMD, Airbnb, ConocoPhillips, Starbucks, Uber, and Yum Brands. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thank you, Charlie. And in Europe, shares of Barclays are up 0.5%. Trading revenue rose greater than expected, 45%. This gain, driven by fixed income, commodities, and currencies trading, excludes some hedging losses tied to its mistakenly issued securities earlier this year. In his first TV interview since taking the top job, Chief Executive Officer C.S. Venkatakrishnan spoke about the U.K. economy with Bloomberg's Francine Lacroix.
What I'm hoping you see is what people will call a soft landing and a shallow recession, helped by the initial conditions, And so what you might see is an increase in unemployment. You might see some credit weakness among customers, but it won't be so bad that you see distress in society.
We're going to bring you more of our conversation with Chief Executive Officer C.S. Venkatakrishnan. It's a little later in the program.
Well, another major story we're following this morning, Amy, takes us to Brazil and a dramatic comeback for former President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. The left-wing politician has won the presidential election, narrowly defeating incumbent Jair Bolsonaro. 3 years ago, Lula was in a jail cell on corruption charges. Juan Pablo Spinetto is Bloomberg's managing editor for economy and government in Latin America.
Less than 3 years ago, he was still in jail. So if we talk about perspective, this is probably one of the greatest political comebacks I saw in my life. Lula was president for 8 years at the beginning of the century. He was one of the most popular politicians on earth. At some point when Barack Obama was president, he called him the guy, right? The most important and most popular president.
Bloomberg managing editor Juan Pablo Spinetto says Bolsonaro has neither conceded the race nor commented on the results.
And in other political news this morning, Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi criticized U.S. export curbs in a call with Secretary of State Antony Blinken. Wang's comments about export controls were an apparent reference to Washington's move earlier this month to restrict Chinese access to chip-making technology.
On the economic front in Asia, Amy, China's factory and services activity contracted in October. Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis has more from Hong Kong.
The downshift suggests that COVID curbs and the property crisis are taking a toll. The official PMI fell to 49.2 from 50.1 in September and below estimates. The non-manufacturing PMI dropped to 48.7 from 50.6 and also below estimates. Bloomberg Economics says as bad as these numbers are, they probably understate the true weakness. New export orders slumped all the way to 47.6 and non-manufacturing employment dropped to 46.1. In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Okay, Brian, thank you. Futures are moving lower this Monday morning. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines and a check of sports. This is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Nathan. It's 5:07 on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr with more on what else is going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Amy. We're learning more information about the attack on Paul Pelosi, husband of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. It's said the suspect allegedly had a bag full of zip ties along with a hammer he brought to Pelosi's San Francisco home. The suspect, David Pop, will officially be charged today and arraigned tomorrow. Pelosi is the latest in a growing wave of threats and plots against elected officials. On Face the Nation, Margaret Brennan asked Tom Emmer, congressman and chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee, about a tweet he posted several days ago of him touting the Second Amendment, firing a gun with a hashtag, Fire Pelosi.
Why is there a gun in a political ad at all?
Well, now
wouldn't a pink slip be more fitting if it's about firing her?
Exercising our Second Amendment rights, having
fun. That's not a debate about the Second Amendment. Yep. That's not a debate about the Second Amendment. Hashtag yes, fire Pelosi.
Yes, it is.
Emmer said there is no place for violence in our society. Face the Nation can be heard Sundays on Bloomberg Radio. At least 153 people were killed and dozens injured following a crowd crush during Halloween celebrations in Seoul, marking one of the deadliest incidents in South Korea in years. Bloomberg's Sohee Kim has more from Seoul.
Most of the victims were young people, those who were in their 20s, and women who couldn't endure the pressure they got from the crowd crush.
Bloomberg Sohee Kim from Seoul. President Yoon Suk-yeol declared a period of national mourning and vowed to carry out a thorough investigation. Republican Governor Brian Kemp and Democrat Stacey Abrams squared off Sunday night in Georgia's governor race. The governor praised the state's economy.
Thankfully in Georgia, because we were open even when Ms. Abrams didn't want us to be, our economy has been incredibly resilient. We've had two record years for economic development.
Meanwhile, Abrams during the debate promised voters she will not reduce taxes for the rich.
As governor, I will not only lower costs, I will put more money into the pockets of working Georgians, of middle-class Georgians. But what I will not do is give tax cuts to the wealthy and the powerful.
The Abrams-Kemp debate aired on WSB. Drivers, look out for little trick-or-treaters in the tri-state area. It's Halloween. Meanwhile, for the adults, The annual Halloween parade returns to Greenwich Village tonight. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Amy.
All right. Thank you, Michael. 5:09 on Wall Street. Time now for the sports report brought to you by Tri-State Audi. Here's John Stashower.
Thanks, Amy. It was an awfully nice month of October for the Jets and Giants. Both were hoping to cap it with a fifth win in a row. Both saw their winning streaks come to an end. Jets led the Patriots at halftime, but the Pats scored 19 points in a row, beat the Jets for the 13th consecutive time, 22-17 at MetLife. Not a good day for Zach Wilson. Between a couple of touchdown passes, he threw three interceptions. One was a pass he was just trying to throw away. There was a costly Jet penalty in the first half, a roughing the passer that wiped out an 80-yard pick six. Jets fall to 5-3. The Giants in Seattle, the game was tied at 7, then 10, then 13 in the fourth quarter.
Gino going to throw again on first down. Pump fake. Going to throw deep. Got a man in the corner. He didn't block it. Touchdown, Seahawks. What a drive led by Geno Smith. Tyler Lockett was not going to let this one get away.
Cairo had the call. Tyler Lockett had dropped a TD pass earlier, also had a fumble that led to a Giants TD. But Seattle scored again 4 minutes later. Seahawks won 27-13. Richie James was a Giants goat. He fumbled punts in both halves. Both led to Seattle scores. Giants are 6-2 and off next week. Knicks got a good look at the guy they were trying to acquire in the offseason in Cleveland. Donovan Mitchell scored 38 points. He made 8 three-pointers. He had 12 assists. Cavs rallied to win 121-108. Rangers on Amika Zibanejad power play goal with 7 minutes left. Won 3-2 at Arizona. The Devils routed Columbus 7-1. The World Series is in Philadelphia. Astros and Phillies are 1-1 going to tonight's Game 3. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Amy.
All right, thank you, John. Checking futures now. S&P futures down 25 points. Dow futures down 172. NASDAQ futures down 96. Much more still to come on Bloomberg Daybreak. This is Bloomberg. The Bloomberg Sports Report was brought to you by Audi. Don't let someone else drive off in the Audi model you've always wanted. Visit your local Tri-State Audi dealer to get behind the wheel of yours today, or visit AudiOffers.com for more information.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
I'm Nathan Hager. European stocks have erased early gains. U.S. equity futures are slipping at the start of another busy week of earnings and key central bank decisions, including the Federal Reserve. We check the markets for you every 15 minutes during the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures right now are down 25 points. Dow futures down 179. NASDAQ futures down 92 points. The DAX in Germany is trading little change. TAC in Paris down 0.3%. The 10-year Treasury is down 12/32nds, yield 4.06%, yield on the 2-year 4.49. NYMEX crude is down 0.5% or 45 cents at $87.45 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.3% or $5 at $16.39.80 an ounce. The euro 0.9925 against the dollar, British pound 1.1555. The yen is at 148.27. Looking at Bitcoin, it's down 0.9% at $20,500. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now with more on what's going on around the world, here's Michael Barr. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Brazilians have delivered a very tight victory to Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva in their presidential election. It gives the leftist former president another shot at power in a rejection of incumbent Jair Bolsonaro's far-right politics. At least two Americans are among the more than 150 people killed in a crowd surge in Seoul, South Korea. Mourners left flowers to pay tribute to the victims near the site. Military teams are searching for people missing after a century-old pedestrian bridge collapsed into a river in western India last night, killing at least 132 people. In the NFL, the Giants lost. The Patriots beat the Jets 22-17. The Commanders and 49ers won. In the NBA, the Knicks lost. The Celtics beat the Wizards 112-94. The Warriors lost. In hockey, the Devils and Rangers won. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Amy.
All right, thank you, Michael. It is 5:20 now on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and we are joined now by Lori Calvasina, Head of U.S. Equity Strategy, RBC Capital Markets. Lori, good morning. Thanks for taking the time with us. Stocks are entering the last day of the trading month in rally mode. S&P 500 gaining almost 9% in October. Dow Jones Industrial Average has surged more than 14%. Have we found the bottom? Is this a bear market rally? Where are we?
Hi, well, thanks for having me as always. You know, look, we think that the equity market is in the middle of this sort of longer, extended, messier bottoming process. And I do think we'll see some volatility for the next few months or so, you know, kind of well into the early part of next year. But I do think it is possible that equities have put in that low. One thing we tend to see is that if you go back over time and look at big crises, what you tend to see is that equities of S&P 500, rather, makes its low about 3 to 6 months before earnings estimate revisions stop going down. So if we think that sort of, you know, April, May is the time frame when we'll be done with those downward revisions, now is about the time you want to be looking for a bottom.
Now, we saw the tech heavyweights, Microsoft, Amazon, Alphabet, Meta, plunge after earnings. But the overall market was resilient, and that seems to be the key word, resiliency. What does it tell you?
So I thought it was really interesting price action. And I do think that we're seeing, you know, some rational moves so far in this reporting season. If you look at how companies are reacting to their beats and misses, we're seeing energy companies are doing quite well in regards to the beats, but some of those broader TIMT spaces are doing pretty poorly in regards to the misses. And I think you do have sort of a shorter term crowd that's playing that latter area. One of the things we talked about in our weekly this morning, Amy, is that if you look at positioning on the CFTC data for asset managers, specifically on U.S. equity futures, it's pretty washed out across the broader U.S. equity market, but it's been really washed out, i.e. below financial crisis type lows for areas like small caps and the Dow. So while the growth trade has been looking pretty washed out, it's been looking even more washed out in the cyclicals, the small caps, and the old economy stocks.
So as you're seeing those third quarter reports, what is your takeaway from these companies? Is it all about the resiliency?
So I think you're seeing, you know, we're still in the middle of it. So this story is still being written. But I do think that companies that are executing well, that are having, you know, sort of more resilient business models, more resilient product lines, management teams who are frankly able to navigate the macro a bit better, they are coming through a bit better than companies that were really, you know, just sort of sailing on the tailwinds of the recovery off the COVID lows. So I do think that we're starting to see, you know, sort of a messier take on demand now that we're hearing from more sectors, more industries, more companies. We're hearing, you know, kind of more concern about labor, more kind of softening of the labor backdrop. It's very, very messy so far. But in general, I think we've got a mix of resiliency and a mix of that weakness that investors have long been looking for finally starting to take shape.
So do you think this week's Fed meeting then could be potentially market moving?
You know, as much as I wish that it wasn't, I think the Fed always ends up being market moving, you know, when we feel like it shouldn't be. And, you know, I sit here looking at my Bloomberg this morning. We're at 3,900 on the S&P. How are we there? I mean, despite all the volatility that we had last week, it feels almost unbelievable. But I do think, you know, as I talk to investors, there are many that are still sort of looking for that kind of peak in inflation, making the case that inflation is set to moderate, that the Fed should be, you know, pausing or pivoting a bit next year. So I do think those hopes are alive and well, and some of that's probably embedded in this 3,900 price right now.
And, you know, Lori, I'm sort of a political news girl. How are the midterms impacting your strategy?
This is the most untalked about story, I think, in U.S. equity markets. I know the political news crowd is certainly talking about it a lot. But, you know, you do tend to see equity markets bottom a few weeks before the midterms and midterm election years. On average, we have about a 7% move into year end. If you look at a year like 2002, it was even stronger. I think you had a 21% rally off the lows into the year end highs. So I think that the fact that the Republicans are doing better in things like the betting markets, the generic congressional ballot, as you know, kind of Biden's fortunes have fallen a little bit, I think that's helping equity markets. I think that, you know, we'll see what happens after the midterms themselves. But I think that's been one of the big reasons for this move back to 3,900 that we've seen.
And 30 seconds, just 30 seconds here, Lori. What's your look ahead? What are you watching for?
So, you know, we're obviously watching the Fed this week and the reaction to it. You know, I'm interested to see more consumer companies come in and report late in reporting season. That's probably the biggest thing I'm going to be paying attention to the next couple weeks.
All right, Lori Calvasina, Head of U.S. Equity Strategy at RBC Capital Markets. It is always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your insights and your time this morning. S&P futures now down 21 points. Dow futures down 153. NASDAQ futures down 79 points. The 10-year price, or rather the 10-year treasury, down 12/32. The 10-year yield at 4.06%. 2-year yield at 4.49%. We have much more still to come on this Monday morning edition of Bloomberg Daybreak. We're going to check the markets, bring you the latest news in business, economics, and finance. This is Bloomberg.
All right, Amy, thanks.
Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by the New York Community Trust. Your name will live on as champion of the causes you care about for years to come through a charitable bequest to the New York Community Trust. Learn more at philanthropist.nyc.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good Monday morning. I'm Amy Morris.
And I'm Nathan Hager. We're about 4 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are lower to start the morning, but still stocks enter the last day of the trading month in rally mode. The S&P 500's gained almost 9% in October, while the Dow has surged more than 14%. Phil Orlando, chief equity strategist with Federated Hermes, thinks we're still in for a bumpy road ahead.
There's been this perception among the market. We've seen this from that big rally mid-June to mid-August, and then this rally over the last couple of weeks, this perception that there'll be this immaculate decline in inflation, which is going to allow the Federal Reserve to stop hiking interest rates and turn around and start cutting interest rates. We are not that sanguine. It's going to be a problem longer than the market thinks.
Phil Orlando with Federated Hermes is still positioning defensively as the Fed continues to tighten monetary policy.
And we're watching a couple of key events this week. The Fed makes an interest rate decision on Wednesday, and the government issues its monthly employment report on Friday. Katrina L. is a senior economist with Moody's Analytics.
We have seen that the U.S. economy is still kind of, you know, roaring ahead, but momentum has definitely slowed. And I think what the Fed is really going to continue to focus on is the strength of the labor market. And while we have seen some softening in the labor market, it's still tight beyond comfort levels.
Katrina L. with Moody's says she expects the Fed to raise rates another 75 basis points this week before easing in the coming months. Stick with us all week for the latest Fed coverage. We'll bring you Chair Jay Powell's full comments live Wednesday on Bloomberg Radio and Television.
Well, over in Europe, Amy, shares of Barclays are up 1.1%. Trading revenue rose more than expected thanks to fixed income, commodities, and currencies trading. In his first broadcast interview since taking on the top job, CEO C.S. Venkatakrishnan spoke about the U.K. economy with Bloomberg's Francine Lacroix.
What you might see is an increase in unemployment. You might see some credit weakness among customers, but it won't be so bad that you see distress in society. However, it has to be managed carefully, and it has to be managed aggressively with a balancing of the budget, and that's what the Prime Minister has said in the last couple of days.
And we'll bring you more of our conversation with Barclays CEO coming up later on Bloomberg Daybreak.
In Brazil, it's a dramatic comeback for former President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, the left-wing politician winning the presidential election, narrowly defeating incumbent Jair Bolsonaro. 3 years ago, Lula was in a jail cell on corruption charges. Bolsonaro has neither conceded the race nor commented on the results.
The futures are moving lower this morning. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines and a check of sports. This is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Nathan. 5:33 on Wall Street. We bring in Michael Barr with more on what else is going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Amy. The man accused of attacking Paul Pelosi, the husband of Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, is expected in court today to face attempted murder and other charges. Investigators are examining 42-year-old David DePopp's social media pages, which allegedly include false conspiracy theories about the 2020 election. There's word DePopp had zip ties and duct tape in his bags Friday when he allegedly broke into the Pelosi's San Francisco home. South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol has promised a full investigation and support for those affected after a crowd crush in Seoul killed more than 150 people. Bloomberg's So-hee Kim reports from Seoul.
There were tens of thousands of people packed in a narrow alley on a hill, and suddenly it went out of control, as people described, as they were falling like dominoes.
Bloomberg's Sohee Kim in Seoul. There are calls this morning for the United Nations to broker the resumption of wheat exports from Ukraine. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
Russia is blocking the departure of any ships carrying wheat out of Ukraine, saying that drone strikes are originating off the ships. President Joe Biden says very concerning.
It's really outrageous. There's been increased starvation. There's no reason for them to do that. But they're always looking for some rationale to be able to say the reason they're doing something outrageous is because the West made them do it.
Ukraine says 218 ships in total have been blocked. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Donald Trump's company, the Trump Organization, is on trial this week for criminal tax fraud. Opening statements and the first witnesses are expected today in New York. Among the key prosecution witnesses, Trump's longtime finance chief, Alan Weisselberg, who pleaded guilty and has agreed to testify against the company in exchange for a five-month jail sentence. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Amy.
All right. Thank you, Michael. It's 5:35 on Wall Street. Time now for the sports report, brought to you by Tri-State Audi. Here's John Stashower.
All right, Amy. Geno Smith was the high draft pick of the Jets. Spent 1 year with the Giants, mostly as a backup quarterback. That's been his role almost his entire career. But Seattle traded the unhappy Russell Wilson, gave the job to Smith. He's been sensational, led the Seahawks to a 27-13 win over the Giants. Smith was asked about beating his old team.
I spent 1 year with the Giants, and so that year to me was like a blur. And, you know, my life has moved on from then. I don't have any remorse towards anyone there. In fact, you know, this to me, this game was for Ben McAdoo and Jerry Reese. They believed in me. And so as far as, you know, any other thing, I don't really care for it. You know, I'm happy to be here in Seattle.
McAdoo and Reese were the Giants coach and GM back in 2017. Smith's got the highest completion percentage in the NFL. Seattle's in first place. The Giants offense struggled. Only touchdown due to a Seattle fumble at their two-yard line. Quiet day for Saquon Barkley. Season low, 62 yards from scrimmage. The Giants' four-game win streak ends. They're 6-2, tied for second with Dallas. Philadelphia won again. Eagles are 7-0. Jets also had their four-game win streak, and their losing streak versus New England grew to 13. Patriots won at MetLife 22-17. They intercepted Zach Wilson three times. Bill Belichick is now the second winningest coach in NFL history, trailing only Don Shula. Last night, Buffalo sent Green Bay to a fourth loss in a row. Knicks blew a lead, lost at Cleveland 121-108. Donovan Mitchell scored 38 against the Knicks, who tried to acquire him throughout the offseason. Rangers won 3-2 at Arizona. Devils all over Columbus 7-1. Astros and Phillies tied at 1. They play Game 3 of the World Series tonight in Philly. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Amy?
All right, thank you, John. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. Time now for the Tri-State Business Report. Here with that is Bloomberg's Wendy Gillette.
Two New Jersey candy companies are leading the way in how the confectionery industry helps consumers manage sugar intake. NJBiz reports Mars Wrigley, based in Newark and Hackettstown, and Ferrero USA in Parsippany, teamed up with other large candy companies in the industry to increase the number of products that list calorie content and offer smaller sizes. Half of individually wrapped products made by the participating companies are now available in sizes that contain 200 calories or less per pack. Planet Fitness is opening another location in New Jersey. You'll soon be able to flex your biceps in Hawthorne in Passaic County. It's the 12th Planet Fitness Club in northern New Jersey and the 7th in Passaic County. The opening date is slated for December. A Morgan Stanley strategist is weighing in on how the Fed will handle interest rates. Michael Wilson, a strategist with a New York City-based investment bank, predicts the end of the Fed's campaign to raise rates is coming soon. That's the Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Wendy Gillette.
All right. Thank you, Andy. It's 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Potusk on WFLA Tampa Bay. We're talking about the Florida Chick-fil-A finding success with a three-day work week of 13 to 14-hour shifts.
I'm Joan Doniger telling WHAS listeners in Louisville, Macy's has updated job listings to include pay ranges.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WBBM in Chicago, I'm reporting that the Walgreens-controlled Village MD is looking at picking up Summit Health, a healthcare network that has almost 400 locations.
I'm Caroline Hetke, Bloomberg DAB, Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on the Prime Minister's first full week in the job as business confidence hits the lowest since March 2021.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. It is 5:39 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. Ukraine's government has received more than $60 billion in assistance from the U.S. since the Russian invasion. Now, some Republican leaders want to toughen oversight over how those funds are being spent. They're right to do so. Washington has accounted for two-thirds of all military and humanitarian assistance offered to Ukraine since the start of the war. Supplies of American-made weaponry have enabled Ukraine to withstand Russia's initial onslaught. It's imperative that the U.S. ensure the money is being properly spent. With government spending already a campaign issue ahead of the midterms, it's inevitable that lawmakers, including some Democrats, will insist on greater transparency as a condition for more aid. The bipartisan support in Congress for assisting Ukraine has been indispensable to the country's survival in the face of Vladimir Putin's assault. Greater transparency over the flow of U.S. aid will help to ensure it lasts. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And this is Bloomberg. The Bloomberg Sports Report was brought to you by Audi. Don't let someone else drive off in the Audi model you've always wanted. Visit your local Tri-State Audi dealer to get behind the wheel of yours today or visit AudiOffers.com for more information.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
I'm Nathan Hager. This update is brought to you by SEI. Built on advanced technologies and 50 years of innovation, SEI offers asset managers a comprehensive and flexible operations outsourcing platform. Go to SEIC.com/managers. European stocks are trading mixed now. Futures in Wall Street moving lower at the start of another busy week for earnings and a key Federal Reserve decision. We check the markets every 15 minutes during the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 16 points. Dow futures down 111. NASDAQ futures are lower by 67 points. The DAX in Germany is up 0.1%, while the CAC in Paris is down about 0.1%. 10-year Treasury is down 11/32nds, yield 4.06%. Yield on the 2-year, 4.48%. NYMEX crude's moving lower, down 0.8% or 73 cents at $87.17 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.1% now or $2.30 at $16.42.50 an ounce. The euro 0.9937 against the dollar, British pound 1.1566. The yen is at 148.25. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash, and now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. More than 150 people were killed in a crowd surge in Seoul, South Korea. Mourners left flowers to pay tribute to the victims near the site. The Supreme Court revisits the issue of affirmative action today. The case before the court will focus on admission policies at the University of North Carolina and at Harvard. In the NFL, the Giants lost. The Patriots beat the Jets 22-17. The Commanders and 49ers won. In the NBA, the Knicks lost. The Celtics beat the Wizards 112-94. The Warriors lost. In hockey, the Devils and Rangers won. Game 3 of the World Series is tonight in Philadelphia. The Astros and Phillies so far are even at a game apiece. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Amy.
All right. Thank you, Michael. It is 5:49 on Wall Street. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak. Brazilian president-elect Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva calling for peace and unity after narrowly winning a divisive runoff election, defeating far-right incumbent Jair Bolsonaro, who has yet to accept defeat. We are joined now live by Bloomberg Spanish Bureau Chief and former Brazil correspondent Rodrigo Oriella. Rodrigo, thank you for taking the time with us this morning. As I said, Bolsonaro hasn't conceded yet. Is that a surprise to you or a concern at all?
I'm not sure it's a surprise. But I think it is definitely a concern for a lot of people. He has always portrayed himself a bit as an anti-establishment person, even though he's been in politics for 40 years. And he has been attacking and criticizing institutions such as the Electoral Board for quite some time. So there is a lot of questions and uncertainty about what he could do or what he could say to if he decides not to concede the victory, right? And he has a lot of supporters who are also very, very anti-Lula. So it is not something to be relaxed about if he doesn't concede.
Okay, so then what are you going to be watching for? What happens now?
Well, as far as him conceding, you know, it's a question of him coming out and saying something, because so far he has been pretty much locked up with his closest collaborators. He apparently hasn't even communicated with some of his ministers and lawmakers. So he's probably only locked up with his sons, who are his closest allies. Mm-hmm. So that's the first point, to see what he does. But also, I think it's important to see who does come out and concede victory. For example, one of the leaders of the Bolsonaro camp, roughly, in Congress, has already conceded. So if more people who are close to the Bolsonaro sphere do that, it may also weaken any attempts not to concede.
What would a Lula da Silva administration look like?
Well, first of all, Lula built his campaign on a wide number of supporters who are not his traditional supporters. His current vice president, Geraldo Alckmin, was actually his main contender in one of the previous elections. So he's a real, it's a bit like a Democrat taking a leading Republican on his ticket. Oh. And so he really made an attempt to try to amplify the size of his support base. So now the question is, once he is in government, will he continue to do that? Will he still rely on all these people who are not really his party base? That's point number one. Point number two is he has spoken a lot about investing or spending on social programs and social plans, social benefits for the poor, and pulling out hundreds of millions of people out of poverty. And he has also spoken about the importance of environmental policies in protecting the Amazon, which Bolsonaro did nothing to do, did none of that in his years in government. So there will clearly be a lot of public spending at top of Lula's agenda. So that's a big question as well.
All right. And we got about 30 seconds here. What other reactions are you hearing with this?
Well, so far there have been a lot of support from foreign dignitaries, including President Biden, who were really quick out of the gate to come and show their support and concede that Lula had won.
All right. Thank you so much, Bloomberg's Rodrigo Oriella. Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate you taking the time with us this morning. And we're going to watch the developments in Brazil with you. Nathan.
All right, Amy. Thank you. It's now 5:53 on Wall Street. Time for our Bloomberg Law Report, brought to you by American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 90 years. More at ADR.org. Now let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Bloomberg's Jeff Fellinger.
The Internal Revenue Service estimates the tax gap, the difference between taxes owed and taxes paid, has grown to $496 billion. iRobot investors who sought to block the buyout by Amazon.com have withdrawn their lawsuits, but they left the door open to refiling their claims. The Ninth Circuit rejected a proposal by the city of Reno, Nevada, to tax streaming services such as Netflix and Hulu.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Now to another legal story we're watching. New York City will join a growing list of cities and states across the country when its pay transparency law takes effect tomorrow. It requires most New York City employers to disclose the minimum and maximum annual salary or hourly wage in job postings. A statewide bill proposing a similar pay transparency law was passed by the New York State Legislature in June and is awaiting the governor's signature. For more, Bloomberg's June Grosso speaks to Ann Dana, a partner at King & Spalding.
I take it the point of this is not just to make life easier for job seekers, that there is also a hope that it will promote pay equity?
Yes, I think proponents of pay disclosure laws do argue that these types of laws will help close the wage gap for women and minorities. You know, while it remains to be seen if this becomes a reality as these laws get passed, I think there's no doubt that these laws provide more pay information to applicants and to employees. And I think that we do anticipate that we're going to see that impact in the workplace, particularly, you know, I think some commentators are predicting that companies are going to be able to see what salary ranges their competitors are offering and therefore kind of match what competitors are paying, which could actually alter some of the recruiting methods that are going on right now. I think other people are also anticipating that this may give rise to more pay equity litigation.
Do you see this as a trend that's going to spread, these pay transparency laws?
I think that there's a real hunger right now from employees for access to more information about pay. And I think that there's a trend with employers really looking to ensure they have employee trust, and pay disclosure is one of the ways to do that. In the past few years, we've seen a real proliferation of these types of laws, and that trend is expected to continue. And I think it's important to understand that context in order to see how New York City is kind of at the forefront of some of the changes in these laws. So one of the key differences that we've really been seeing in the passage of these laws is that originally the laws were really focused on being reactive, and they were only requiring pay disclosure when somebody asked for salary information, whether it was an applicant or when they were given a conditional offer. And now what we're seeing is a shift in the laws, and the laws are becoming more proactive, with states and cities amending these pay disclosure laws, requiring employers to provide proactively salary ranges up front with posting of job advertisements.
And that's Ann Dana, a partner at King & Spalding, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grosso. Catch more of that interview, plus analysis of the latest legal news, by subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast or downloading the show at Bloomberg.com/podcasts. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com and on the Bloomberg Terminal at BLawGo. Futures are moving lower out of a very busy week for earnings and a key Fed decision on Wednesday. Right now, S&P futures are down 20 points, Dow futures down 139, and NASDAQ futures are lower by 78 points. Germany's DAX is up 0.1%. The CAC in Paris is down 0.2%, while the FTSE in London is up 0.2%. 10-year Treasury's down 12/32. The yield 4.06%. Yield on the 2-year 4.48%. NYMEX crude is now down 1% or 88 cents at $87.02 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.2% at $16.41.90 an ounce. And the euro is trading at 0.9941 against the dollar. Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.